conspiracies, endless wars, hidden forbidden history, the depopulation agenda, cryptozoology, mystical visions, hidden mysteries, advanced subterranean civilizations, flying saucers, alien abductions, and secret space programs, time travel, wellness, and healthy living. Where do you go to find out about these subjects and more? To James Bartley's Cosmic Switchboard Show. That's where. James Bartley will provide cutting-edge information and will interview the top investigators and researchers in a variety of fields. Listen in every week to the Cosmic Switchboard Show, hosted by James Bartley.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you are listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Ralph Anthony Raw Castaldo. Raw is a published poet, a songwriter, a lifelong martial artist, a retired Muay Thai fighter, a coach, mystic, and hereditary strega. Raised in the ancient ways of hereditary Italian witchcraft, his family has been protecting ancient secrets regarding Lake Nemi in Italy. He is a gifted intuitive who has been communicating with the spirit watchers who he was taken by during a near-death experience at the age of 9. In 2002, while living in Los Angeles, he was hunted down for his abilities and family genetics bloodline and abducted by what may have been the military or black ops. Now a husband, father, and Muay Thai coach, he is ready to discuss his interesting journey and the prophecies, secrets his family has been protecting, also a wide variety of topics, including how the old ways have been suppressed by Christianity, Catholicism, the Vatican, and the governments of the world, while society is being deliberately programmed and forced into a state of amnesia. He will also discuss such topics as what the moon really is, ancient history, aliens, interdimensional beings, and how he was basically forced into going down the shamanistic path by the spirits. So without any further ado, Ra Castaldo, how are you?
How's it going, James? I'm very happy to be here. It's an honor.
The pleasure and the honor is all ours, Ra. And for the benefit of our listeners, could you tell us what strega is? Can you tell us a bit about the hereditary nature of mysticism in your family tree, in your family line?
Well, this goes back thousands of years. The hereditary strega is a very powerful thing. Now, when I say the word witch, some people tend to think automatically they think evil or Satan or something to that effect, but a strega is nothing to that effect. What witch means to me is a healer, a mystic, a seer, an herbalist. You know, everything that is good about the earth, we make something from nothing. That's what stregas do. It's the mystery of making something from nothing. Basically, we believe in karma, consequences for all of our actions. We believe in different realms, portals, astral travels, dimensions, worlds. There's both spiritual beings and otherworld beings out there. We're not alone on this earth. We believe that matter, we are matter forged in the heart of a distant star, and we're temporarily encased in this physical matter, and we're put on earth to spiritually, eternally evolve. And what we don't learn in this life, we have a positive afterlife, and we continually to spiritually evolve. Like, so we're definitely believers in reincarnation. We believe in both the God and the Goddess, the universal mother and father. You know, we believe that there is a universal creator, like that divine spark is inside of us, but it's an all-knowing consciousness. That's the creation of the world. This is what a strega believes. This is what they live by. We have an unseen energy on this earth. We believe in that. We believe that there's amazing power on this earth, natural places of amazing power. There's an infinite earth memory here that can be accessed, like an Akashic record. There's also the psychic abilities. We believe that that's just a normal part of our life. And, you know, special gifts that come with this, you know, I don't know if I'm talking too much here, James. I don't know if you want to stop
please.
Me.
No, but, please, go on.
You know, the special gifts of our heritage, you know, are that come with being a strega. And it's not everyone that is, you know, that it's in this bloodline, but it's not everyone who inherits the traits. In each generation, it could be one or several or none that get past these traits. But I can trace my family back to the 1300s on paper. But this goes way back to the turn of the century, Caligula times, and even far beyond. You know, and the stories have been passed down. And like I said, the special gifts that come with this heritage, you know, that we are ancient cloud readers, prophets, shaman, dream seers, and my lines, different Strega lines have different certain things that they inherited and got passed down and gets stronger through each blood, through each generation that gets it. It gets stronger and stronger because you have your ancient ancestors there to back you up, sort of, you know? And my star, it's called the star line, the Tanaric, T-A-N-A-R-A-R-R-I-C, Tanaric, like Tana, and then R-R-I-C at the end, Tanaric. They're called the Star Witches. And, you know, I think they originated from the Tuscan Etruscan line that way. And that's where some of my ancestry comes from. We're ancient dream seers and cloud readers. That's what basically comes from my family. We know the voice of the wind. We can read the clouds. And we understand, you know, like I said, the voice of the wind. You learn how to speak to the earth, and you can evoke plant spirits. There's ancient oracles and palm readers that go way back in my family. They're dream prophets, and they can call forth all types of spirits, plant spirits. They communicate with our ancestors. It is a very powerful thing. We have a few different ways to do that as well. I can get into if you want me to. But you know, we know how to bring forth beauty and manifest and bless and consecrate. We can communicate with all forest animals. You know, we know how to heal others, you know, I've learned how to heal through people and myself through my own music, through herbs, you know, through moon magic. You know, there's ways to draw down power from the moon where you can, you know, be amplified by the moon. And this leads into being able to astral travel and past life recall and all that, James. I mean, it's steeped into it. We come from Lake Nemi area, and then we had to go south towards Naples eventually. But Lake Nemi is really where it all started for my family's Strega line. And there's Lake Nemi, if no one knows, it's in Benevento, Italy, alongside it's in the Alban Hills. And it's a volcanic crater that's now a beautiful lake. And there's fresh strawberries that grow along it. And we call it Diana's Mirror, you know, because when the moon shines, you know, our goddess, Diana, she's our moon goddess, and when the moon shines on, you know, on Nemi, you can see the reflection. It's Diana's mirror. And my family has been protecting ancient secrets regarding this lake for many, many years. And we know, you know, there is a portal beneath this lake that we protect. It's we know where it is, how it's accessed, and everything. And I believe that's what led to me getting taken by these people, you know, by, you don't want to call them military or off-world people working with the military, whatever. But they tried to access my, you know, ancestry memory.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Ra. There were some interesting circumstances regarding your birth. And then we know that in certain mystical traditions, the timing of one's birth has everything to do with what that person who will be incarnated may be expected to perform as far as tasks, as far as fulfilling a particular destiny. Can you talk a bit about the circumstances of your birth and how your birth ties into this hidden circle of Herodia?
So the hidden circle of Herodia, and then later it changed to Aradia. Or Herodia, you know, at the turn of the century around, there was a princess named Herodia in Rome. It was an offshoot of that lady, but there was, we worshipped a goddess, Herodia. She was basically the same, you know, like a moon goddess. And it was just a different term for the same beings that like labeled everywhere. Some people call her Isis. Some people call her Diana. You know, it's a moon goddess, and you know, different cultures call her different names. But so at one time, my family line was calling her Herodia, and these beings were more than just human at this time. This was around the time of Christ, and they almost had a different kind of DNA where they can levitate and had flight and had high telepathic abilities. And can, you know, had basically witch powers. And this is where the whole myth of the flight on the broom, you see a witch flying on a broom. This is where the whole myth came from, because they were supposedly able to fly. And it's weird because in, In my dreams, I'm always able to fly, from place to place. And it's definitely from my ancestry. You know, it's like embedded in my DNA that we were meant to fly, like our not just my line, all of us humans. At one point, we had powers of the gods or demigods or whatever you want to call them. You know, we had that power. We were able to levitate. We were able to do all that kind of stuff. And it was taken from us. There was a veil put over our third eyes, our pineal glands at one point. And you know, society's just making us blanketed towards that. To get back to my birth, no, I went on an offshoot a little bit, but yeah. So Herodia turned into Aradia. And Aradia, she was sent to us in the 1300s. She was born in Volterra, Italy, and her name was Aradia, and she comes from a Strega line on both sides, like me. So I have it on both my mother's and my father's side. So me and my siblings, I'm the youngest, are one of the last of the full-blooded Strega. And it's weird because I'll get into Aradia later, the story of Aradia. Because she came to us as an avatar in the 1300s. She had an experience at Lake Nemi, and she was given she met the Gregorian, she was given scrolls, and I'll get into all that later. And it was just like almost the Joseph Smith story from the Mormons. She was given a scroll that was golden and had certain codes you had to unlock on it, and it had all the access to all the portals on Earth, it had the, where they are, all that stuff. And the Vatican took these scrolls. To get back to my birth, my brother was born in 12 years ahead of me, and my sister 10 years ahead of me. My mom had tried to have me 2 years after my sister, so I should have been 8 years older, but she couldn't. For many years, she tried. 4 or 5 years, she tried. She gave up. And then 10 years later, 1978, I'm born. And when my mom got pregnant, she knew she was going to have another. She always knew that she was going to have a special baby. And she always said that. And that's why she always kept trying, but it couldn't happen. And even the doctor, it was mysterious that when she went into labor with me, she had to drive an hour away to pass 3 different hospitals to have birth. To go to the special doctor. And my mom had an incident on the beach before she got pregnant with me where she was all of a sudden wrapped up in a beach blanket while she was sunbathing and thrown into the ocean. And she heard this weird, like this weird seal sounds. And like she saw cylinders of light. And then all of a sudden she woke up on the beach and she was unraveled and she lived. And then not too far from that, she was pregnant. And so when she got pregnant and she went into labor with me, they had to drive an hour to go to this. And they passed, like I said, 3 hospitals. And my brother at the time was 12 years old. My sister was 10. And my brother was a budding artist, you know, a prodigy almost, a really good artist. So he's in the waiting room as my mom's in labor. And he's drawing Mickey Mouse. And because they didn't know what I was going to be at that time, they didn't have, you know, they didn't know. So my brother's drawing Mickey and Minnie Mouse pulling on a dandelion in the waiting room while my mom's trying to give labor to me. And now 17 hours have passed and the umbilical cord wrapped around my neck. It's really hard for them to give birth to me. And, after 17 hours, she finally does. And, that's the 1 in 7 right there, 17. And then I'm born on July 12th, 7/12. And I was born 7 pounds, 5 ounces, which is 7/12. That's another 7 and 12. It was and it was like right after at 7:05 in the morning, which is another 7 and 12. 7 and 5 is 12. And so it was really a lot of, you know, almost like it was set in stone, you know, and from like that point on, like my whole childhood, you know, it's like I was raised for this certain stuff. Like I was special from the jump. And it's amazing now that I look back, you know, I'm 38 years old and I start to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And it's pretty frightening that I really think that pre-birth we choose, somehow we're guided or we make some kind of contract to go into a certain bloodline or where it's already almost like it's very interesting though. Just the whole, you know, even in like Tibet, you know, they believe like if you ever read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, you have to go through this whole realm of different lights, like for the blue lights and the yellow lights. The yellow lights lead to the land of like the hungry ghosts, the realm of the hungry ghosts, and the blue lights, they allure you. You know, it's like the Bardo plane, they call it. When you're, and the Tibetans, if someone's on their deathbed, the Tibetan priests are whispering in their ear, telling them, giving them guidance, you know, and eventually the dead person's energies, they enter out the top of the head, like the sutures, like, and they do like these chants to try to break open the suture in the top of the head to let the energies out. Like the Tibetans knew about all this long ago. So that's pretty a mysterious thing about my birth that I was talking about. How it was like, you know, my mom, it took 10 years to have me. And then the whole circumstances of what went down was pretty mysterious. You know, definitely I was the one out of the 3 children who inherited the Strega traits. We've all heard the stories from my grandmother and, you know, my siblings as well. We all heard the stories when we were little, but I'm the only one that really took on the ways, the old ways. And these old ways, James, they're what I believe that can awaken us all. You know, our DNA is, they say we have 97% of our DNA is just junk DNA. I mean, come on, junk DNA? It's ridiculous. What's laying dormant in our DNA is our true abilities. You know, we're...
Yes.
Yeah, it's laying dormant. And we're these spiritual beings, you know, we're meant to spiritually evolve. We're not meant to chase this material trap, you know, that we're in. And that's where we've all went wrong. You know, there's been a veil put over our consciousness. I mean, we're not limited to five senses. We can go beyond the five senses. We just have to open up our mind's eye and really start to awaken and listen. You know, I mean, think about it. This is our time of remembering as a species. One by one, people are starting to, you know, we're digging in the sand. We're trying to find different, we're in a time of remembering. We need to know our past. We need to know who we are. It's mandatory. I mean, we have to know. It's been hidden for too long. I think people are starting to awaken. And I think that's what you're trying to accomplish as well as my show, what I'm trying to accomplish. I mean, it's gotta happen. And it's interesting because right before I came on, like right before we started the show tonight, I had a sighting right outside my house, you know, and this is not common, even though the next town over to me is Pine Bush, New York, is like a known UFO spot. But it was like seven or eight reddish orbs. I emailed it to you. You'll see. First, I saw them. I looked out the window. Something told me to look out the window, and they were there, and they were changing formation. And then, so I yelled to my daughter at first to look. She was like, oh, they're probably stars. She didn't even want me. So I run outside with my phone. I'm recording it. And there's only the one or two left now. And it's switching from regular white to red and blinking out and flying all over the sky. And then I switch to the other side of the sky to saw the beautiful crescent moon, you know, and then I go back and you see these red orbs there, you know, and it was amazing, man. And it definitely had to do with your show. Definitely.
Now, what happens sometimes, Ra, is when someone is born into a particular role, a particular destiny, in a particular mystical bloodline, the child growing up has at times to deal with lots of things that the other children don't really have to deal with, i.e. visions, i.e. supernatural events, i.e. a feeling of isolation and detachment from their surroundings, because a lot of times we don't really feel like we belong here. What was your upbringing like? Did you have the benefit of elders that kind of saw you for what you were and guided you along the way, or were there times when you were pretty much left to your own devices to figure this out for yourself?
Like you said, it can be a very frightening thing for a child. And like I said before, my siblings are 10 and 12 years older than me. So I think it was definitely planned that way, like knowing that I was coming, and they did that for a reason, because just when I was coming into the ways, you know, 9, 10 years old, you know, when I was going towards puberty, my siblings were getting married and leaving the house. So it was kind of like I did it on my own without them, you know, around too much. My great grandmother, her name was Santa Mauro, which means Saint Mauro, you know, Santa, her name was like Santa, you know. S-A-N-T-A, just like Santa Claus. Her name was Santa. And she was around until I was about 8 or 9 years old. And she noticed it in me as well. And a few times she told me, you know, she was very old, and she told me that I was going to be special, that I need to really pay attention to my thoughts, you know. And she, you know, unfortunately passed. And then my grandmother on my other side noticed, and she would tell me different things about how to ward off from the evil eye, and different, you know, lore in the Strega lore, different stories. I also had my great aunts who were alive until I was in my teens, but they all died before I was a man, you know, in my young teens, they all died. So from the time I was like 14 or 15, I was pretty much on my own with the whole Strega thing, you know, but I did learn, you know, some from them, and it was passed on to me. And when I had this like near death experience, I actually had two of them. And once was a more serious one. And then when I was 9, and then later on when I was like 11 or 12, again, I had another one when I hit my head at the town pool and I was unconscious. But, the one I had when I was 9, I used to be, in all types of soccer, traveling soccer. We would travel on all around New York State. I was on all different teams of soccer, and I was in a soccer game. and I got kicked in, you know, the privates, and I guess one had spun around the other, and I went home that night, and I, you know, I woke up with a real bad stomachache. I still went to school, and what happened was a black tissue had formed in one of my testicles, in my left one, and it cut off oxygen going to my brain, and I had passed out. I almost died. It had swelled. So when I had woken up, they had cut me open and pulled the black tissue out. And while I was asleep, you know, I had this near-death experience where when I awoke, I started to remember what happened. And it was a process that has been repeated a few times in my life. If you want me to get into it now or...
Yes, please, get into it.
Well, basically, both times I was awoken, one of my grandmothers I never met, my mom's mother, she died before I was born from cancer, was her face that was waking me up from when I had my operation. She was waking me up, but when I shook my head kind of and I came to, it was the doctor, like, you know, but it was her, at first it was her face and then it was the doctor's face, you know, so, and then I started to remember, like, the minute I woke up though, I knew it, something monumental had happened to me, and it was like a frightening thing because I kept having flashes of it, and it was, I didn't really piece it together till I got older and it happened for real when I was an adult. You know, and I started to really piece together what it was. From this moment on, they were always with, they're always watching and they're always with me. And we call these beings the Grigori, G-R-I-G-O-R-I, the Grigori. And actually, they're actually mentioned in the Book of Enoch in some versions and some translations. You know, they're also mentioned as the Watchers. But, they're not the same Watchers as what the Book of Enoch calls the Watchers. I think somewhere along the line, those two terms got mixed up with the Grigori. Because the ones that's in the Book of Enoch, like Semyaza, you know, all those names of these Watchers in the Book of Enoch, there was 200 of them. And to us, that has nothing to do with the Grigori. The ones that are in the Book of Enoch, to us, are the seeds of the serpent. Those are serpent-like beings. We want to call, whatever you want to call them, the Naga, or you want to call them reptilians. But Lucifer is one of them. You know, he can be equivalent to Enki, or he could be equivalent, call him Semyaza, you could call him, you know, Satan, whatever you want to call him, that Enki or whatever. That's all the same being, and they're seeds of the serpent, you know, that's what we know. You know, to me it's not just a myth, or to me it's a fact. You know, it's just a knowing. Same thing about the moon. There's certain things that to me it's just embedded in my DNA. There's certain things that I know about the moon that to me it's just a knowing. It's not speculation, it's not a theory. You know, it's just, to me, it's a matter of fact. Just like if you talk to certain Hindus and you talk to them or talk to them about Kali or any of the gods, it's not a myth to them. This is the way of life. This is a knowing. You know, this is a fact. These things happened. You know, these things just can't get made up. You know, just like sci-fi movies, I don't think these are just things that people come up with. These are embedded in our memories. These are some kind of different realities, you know, interweaving with us somehow. Everything is, you want to call them tulpas or thought forms or whatever you want to call them. It all has to do with us. Us. We're all the stars. All of us are all linked. There's a million different realities, a million different, you know, us, you know, we probably have 1,000 different versions of us on the phone right now. Maybe, you know, in a different reality, one of us didn't even pick up the line tonight.
The Grigori, when they manifested to you, how did they appear, and when did they begin to manifest in your experience?
Yeah, sorry, I went off on a tangent.
Oh no, it's quite all right.
So I was basically, when I was unconscious during this, you want to call it a near death experience, or what I really think it was a shamanistic initiation. I didn't know at the time, but as I got older and I started to research on my own, I became more knowledgeable in the spiritual realm and working with my Merkaba, and I became really, really activated and really spiritual. And I started to maybe download the knowledge and stuff, because these beings, they don't speak words, you know, they speak with their eyes. They speak with emotions, intent, like somehow you're playing charades with them with their eyes, and you know, you just know what they're saying through their eyes. And what was happening to me when I was unconscious was I was in these tubes, and I was suspended in these tubes. And there was water all over me, but I wasn't wet. It was like some kind of memory and information inside the water. And I was suspended in these tubes, sort of like a crucifix position. Like my arms were out and my legs were out, like almost like in, you know, that man position, like where you show the, you know, what is it, that painting? Yes. Da Vinci.
Da Vinci, I think. Yeah, like a starfish pattern almost.
I was almost suspended like that in these tubes. And there's this water coming over me. And at the north, the north, the south, the east, and the west was standing these figures in robes. Now, from the information that I got from just looking at them, that they were only in these robes to comfort me. They thought that that's what they should look like because they're beings of immense white light. White and maybe even like a tinge of goldish light, but mostly white, bright light. And they had these robes over them to look like they were human form of like a human silhouette, you know, and you could see the white shining out of their face, out of their hood, like bright white light. And this is the same kind of beings that I think that Joseph Smith, when he says, he had an experience with that Moroni, he called he called him an angel, Moroni, or whatever.
Yes.
It's the same. I think I can't say for sure, but from what I get from reading the Book of Mormon and different, you know, research I've done, I think it was one of the Grigori that came to him. And, you know, cause it you don't necessarily have to be a Strega. You just, sometimes just being a shaman or some kind of mystic or, you know, some kind, they lead you on a spiritual path. Cause we believe these Grigori, they're the watchers, you know, they're the eyes of the night. They're always watching anyone and everyone that has psychic abilities or special powers or special DNA or genetics. They're always watching. They're always around. And they guard all the portals and stargates on Earth, all the natural Earth portals. They're there to guard. And I know the Black Ops or government or NASA or some people in the know, they know of these beings for sure. For sure. And it never turns out good for somebody if they ask, if you try to ask them questions or ask them for something, it doesn't turn out well for you. They will contact you and give you knowing when it's time. If that person, if they want, they find you. They let you know. You can never, if you try to approach them with something, it'll never turn out good. But if they choose a special person that they will give knowledge to this person without asking. You cannot ask, but they will give it to you when it's time. They will find you. And I was suspended in these tubes and that water was coming over me like it was downloading information. I was hearing like it was like a computer almost. And when I woke, you know, like I said, they were standing on north, east, west, and south. They were standing at all ends of it like it was some kind of, you know, initiation. And it was coming over me. And when I awoke, you know, I was a different kid. You know, sports, even though I excelled at them and I was really good at them, they didn't mean to as much to me anymore. I was more interested in the stars. And space. I started dressing different. I would get ready for school in the morning, James, and it was like I was putting on a tribal uniform. Like every time I would be looking in the mirror, it was like I was getting ready for war. Like I had my own style. Even in school, in my senior year, I was most individualistic. Like I had my, it's just, I became like a star soldier, man, a tribal warrior. I don't know. It's just, I always was thinking about the cosmos. I became a musician and my music, I don't know where my songwriting came from. It's like it just came out of nowhere. Like, I mean, I always had the ear for music, but I mean, the songwriting thing, it really came from that experience. I got from that experience that I was supposed to go through music. Music was the way through my own personal healing for my next, in the next few stages of my life, definitely was setting the tone for my music, you know, because for a while, it made me go down the wrong path with my music as well. My band got into drugs when I was in my teens and, you know, I was numbing myself because after this experience, I became, the spirit realm was there for me, you know, and it was frightening as a kid because, there were certain things that I would experience that other kids just couldn't see and couldn't sense.
Something you mentioned, Ra, prior to us coming on was that after you had this form of shamanic initiation with the Grigori either seemed to bestow upon you or activate, facilitate in some way certain gifts which you wound up developing, one of which was dream prophecies, i.e. having futuristic prophetic dreams. Another ability seemed to be the ability to access and see other spiritual planes. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah. Well, I always was had intense dreams, you know, as far back as I can remember. But since I had that experience with the Grigori, and they were always there watching, you know, I felt their presence always. It's almost like you can feel them with you as well. I started to get intense dreams, but they weren't dreams. They were more like visions, so real that I don't know if you remember a lot of your dreams, James, but do you ever remember smelling anything in your dreams? No, right?
Yes, yes. On a couple of occasions, you know, the aromas or odors or whatever was quite strong, yes.
Yeah, well, to me, that's when you're really having a vision, because most times it's just you wake up from a dream and it's a dream. You don't really remember having, you know, aromas, you know, like aromas of the past, something that awakens something in the particles in your DNA get turned on, like something gets awakened. And I was having some of these dreams where I would actually be there, like smelling the environment. Like it was more like I was put on another plane, like another realm, another dimension, whatever. But it was so lifelike that I would be there. And it's almost like I'm experiencing another time, another place, another smell. And it's almost like I got transported there. And it happened a few times. One time, have you ever read Madame Blavatsky? You know who she is?
Yes, I haven't read all of her work, but I read some of it.
Well, yeah, I've read
Isis Unveiled, for example. And
Secret Doctrine. Yeah.
Secret Doctrine, yes.
Yeah, I read them throughout the years. I read both of them. But as a child, in 14, 15 years old, I had no clue who Madame Blavatsky was. And I had no clue who Kuthumi was. And I had no clue as well what the Well of Sheshna was. So I had this intense vision one time where I was really tired. It happens usually when I'm so very tired, I'm just slipping. I'll sit back on the couch or something. And I had just came home from soccer practice and I was extremely tired. And my mother was like, oh, go shower. We're going to cook dinner We're going to go out for dinner or whatever she was saying. So I went back on the couch and I was taking off my shin pads and everything from soccer. And I was really exhausted and I just laid back into the couch. And I remember when I laid back into the couch, I felt like I fell into it weightless. And I can almost hear the like this intense vibration. And my eyes are starting to close and I can just see the particles like in the air slowing down and I hear that wah, and then silence. And then I open my eyes and I'm somewhere else. And maybe this has happened maybe 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 times in my life. Different things have happened. So after I hear that silence and I open my eyes, it's like I'm somewhere else and I can't see me, but I can see the surroundings. And This one time I awoke, I went through that whole process of my head vibrating and I seeing the particles in the air, everything's just slowing down and I feel like I'm weightless. And then I awoke and I looked around and there's these white walls and these steps that lead up to the left and lead up to the right. And in front of me was this water, you know, and I can see my reflection in it, but my reflection looked like I was older. It was kind of weird. It was distorted. And I looked to one side and I saw this lady sitting there in like in a yoga pose, a little heavy set. I looked to the other side and there was this bearded turban guy. And then I look on the walls and there's these painted red cobras. And inside the cobras are the eyes are moving and they're looking around. And I could smell this very, very intense smell of flowers. So intense that I can almost smell it right now, just thinking about it. It's been 20 years since that vision. And I could smell it almost now, almost like that funerally smell, like when you go to a funeral or a wake and there's all these flowers and wreaths of flowers around and that smell. It's almost like that smell. It wasn't very long that I was there, but those eyes and the red cobra, that was very special too, because that led to me knowing something about, I think those were the eyes of Apophis. I don't know if you've ever heard that name, Apophis.
Yes, the destroyer from ancient Egypt. He was like the enemy of the gods, and he would come around and cause problems, and they had their hands full trying to keep them at bay.
Yeah, exactly. My research after that vision, it stuck with me for years. I ended up getting the internet later on in life, years later, and reading Madame Blavatsky and seeing her picture. And when you open up The Secret Doctrine and her picture is right there, that is the exact same lady I saw, and that makes my skin crawl in that vision.
Wow.
And the guy to the left in the turban, his name is Kuthumi. I've seen his picture as well, and he's a known associate of Madame Blavatsky. And after he died, she was channeling him, and she talks about it in her work. And those eyes of the cobra, I found out that those were the eyes of Apophis watching that vision, watching.
Wow.
There's been times in my life where I've been lured by these draconian, I don't know what you want to call them, devils. They're into enslavement. They just want to enslave and dominate. And they're into, you know, their dark draconian magic. And same thing like the Temple of Set that they call themselves. That's dark stuff, man. It's ancient stuff. You have to give yourself to them, and they own you. You know, that's it. You don't have free will anymore. And
yes, and they latch on lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. It's not just kind of a one-off. It's when people knuckle under, acquiesce, and bow down and submit to that kind of dark force, it's something that clings on to them for a long time afterwards. It's a phenomenal experience you just described. Now, part of what you were also bestowed with, if that's proper English, was the ability of dream prophecy. Could you describe that too?
Yeah. Well, just the other night, I think I was telling you through an email or something, I had this crazy prophetic type dream that it really scared me a little bit, because if it comes true, then we're going to have some problems on this earth. And, basically, you know, I've had different times in my life where there's a difference between a dream and a vision, and maybe more like what I just described with the Well of Sheshna. What I saw, those steps and those cobras on the wall and the water in front of me, like I ended up seeing pictures of the Well of Sheshna in Benares, India, and that's the place that I was, you know, seeing, and you can't get to the Well of Sheshna, you know, normally. It's a well-kept secret in Benares. You have to know somebody to really get in. It's underneath a gymnasium, like some workout gymnasium in the back room, hidden underneath the carpet, is a trap door going to the Well of Sheshna. And at the bottom of the well, if you drain it, there's these wooden doors with cobras on it, and that leads to Patala. And Patala, into the Hindus, is the underground lair of the Naga, the reptilians. So that was a really, really, you know, intense prophetic dream, because there's beneath Benares is maybe some kind of nest. Same with Arizona and in California. I lived in both places at one time, and there's hives, reptilian hives beneath the ground there.
So getting back,
yeah. So getting back to the prophecies, just a few nights ago, last week, I had one. Basically, to not make it too long of a story, was there was another Earth-like planet found. I don't know whether it was found by NASA or whatever it was. There was another Earth-like planet found, but this planet is not like humans on the planet. It's run by these computers called these Dimension Waves computers. Dimension Waves. And these computers, they're not like a binary computer like we have. They're computers that blend realities. They take over realities. They take over, like, they blend dimensions, leaves of dimensions. And they run this whole planet, these computers. And they have these AI, artificial intelligence humanoids that's linked to these computers. And these humanoids are, they're programmed to terraform planets. And they terraform the planets. They get them ready so they can dimension wave, so they can blend their planet to this planet. And that's what they've been doing to our Earth in this dream. This there had to have been some kind of prophetic warning, because I woke up and I had all the signs. Like, I was drenched in sweat. It was so real to me. And usually in my dreams, like I mentioned earlier, I could fly. I fly from place to place. But in this dream, I was riding on a scooter, and it's one of those like Back to the Future scooters where you're on a skateboard with handlebars, you know, like from that movie. And I'm going from place to place on this scooter, and I'm noticing, like, I'm going through one of my old neighborhoods to go to a store, but every turn I make is like I'm making a turn to a different development. Like, I'm going from neighborhood to neighborhood with each turn, and I'm like thinking in my head, wow, I got to take this round next time. It's really short going this way. I'm like thinking to myself, and then I'm thinking, damn, I got to wake up in a couple hours and go to work. Like I was conscious that I was dreaming and that I was in this dream and that I was experiencing this. And it was like apocalyptic stuff on the, you know, all around, because people were like these zombie-like stares, not like zombie walking dead zombie, but they were just tranched, like in a trance. And I was driving on this scooter and I was with somebody, but I don't remember who it was. And I go to the store and I remember saying like, fly, like, why the hell do I got this scooter? And the guy says to me, well, look in the air. So I look up and there's all these dragons circling the sky. And he says to me, but we're the only ones that can see them. And I look around and I start seeing everybody's like tranced out. And so that's the reason why I wasn't flying, because there was these dragons in the sky. And he's like, dude, it's time for the dimension wave. And that's what he said. So they were like, they've been terraforming our planet, maybe through chemtrails and so on, getting it ready, more metal-like, more cyber-like, more matrix-like for their reality. And they're ready to blend our reality. And I kept seeing the number 28 and that's why I kept thinking maybe September 28, because it was right before that. But maybe it's 2028. Maybe 28 means nothing. Maybe 28 could mean a thousand things. You know, I never like to put dates on things, James, because, you know, people change their minds. That's why I don't understand how some people can even remote view the future, because like future is not set in stone. It's, you know, things change, realities change, timelines change.
Yes, and especially when you consider all the time manipulation, too, yeah. And all the alterations to the aboriginal timeline. What's interesting, and it's very timely that you should mention this, Ra. I remember when you emailed me this prophetic dream you had, and my jaw dropped, quite frankly, because...
Even Eve Lorgan, she said the same thing to Evie. She was like, you need to tell some other people this. This is really, you know...
Yeah, because it reminded me, some of the listeners may be familiar with the story of the Wingmakers. It was a story that gained a lot of circulation on the internet and actually wound up being written about in Nexus Magazine in the past. The long and the short of it was there was an ancient time capsule that was found, I think, somewhere in Arizona, and it was some kind of hidden crypt, some kind of underground facility that archaeologists had found. This civilization that left this information there, I think the story was that they were trying to warn about this potential in the future of this artificial intelligence kind of apocalypse where this revealing would take place and that these marauding AI kind of robots had the potential to come and completely take over, and that's basically what they did. They went from world to world, dimension to dimension, if you will, and basically terraformed and changed things around. Now, what's also interesting was I was just talking to another MyLab the other day, and a similar story emerged where this person was having a dream. In the dream, the individual and a few other people, some of whom I know to be MyLabs also, were confronted by these kinds of beings, but the beings were artificial intelligence. Well, actually, they had kind of a monstrous face, but it was a robotic monstrous face, if you will. They were like an artificial creation, but it was a mixture between an organic creature, but there was elements that clearly indicated that it was some kind of artificial creation too, and that these beings were trying to basically elbow their way into our reality. So. And this story and this concept of artificial intelligence has been coming to the fore a lot of late, because I believe there really is something to it. So as time goes on, I'm going to once again dig up as much information about the Wingmakers and see if there's any new information to be had about it.
You know the stories of Anubis and Osiris from Egypt?
Yes.
Well, they were part AI. They had something like Tesla coils in them, in their backs.
That's what people have to realize, that a lot of the tools of regal rule of monarchy, it's been corrupted. The whole concept has been corrupted down through the ages.
ISIS reassembled him. Osiris. Yes. And he had something like a Tesla coil that was inserted in his back, and you could see it in some of the hieroglyphics that she's inserting it in his back. And same with Anubis. He was some kind of AI, some kind of robotic-like being that transports people through the moon catcher, through the soul catcher, the moon. That's where when you die, you have to pass through the lunar realm, and Anubis is there with the solar barge. You know, that's him. You know, and he's some kind of AI, you know, for sure.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't surprise me, because these advanced beings have long utilized artificial intelligence for one reason or another. So it wouldn't surprise me that some of these beings that people have actually worshipped as gods may have an artificial intelligence element to them.
Yeah.
The time we got left in the first half, Ra, are there any other dream prophecies that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, actually, there is. It was more like I don't know if this is more of a prophecy, but it was more like a warning to me to let me know somebody was evil. In Estrega, we have this author who died in, I think, 2000, and his name is Dr. Leo Lewis Martello. If you ever want to get some of his books, they're still available through my friend and hereditary Estrega, Lori Bruno, who I had on my first episode of my show. She's in her 70s now. She owns a store in Salem, Massachusetts, called Magica, which means the soul of the Magi, Magica. And she's an amazing Strega, and she has his books, the rights to his books, Dr. Leo Lewis Martello. So in my dream, I actually got his books from my mom, who gave them to me when I was younger. And I didn't know what he looked like at the time. And in my dream, there was this evil man, and his hand was glowing red, and he was balding a little bit, and he was a little bit heavy set, and he had this evil face, this red evil face. Like his face was just angry, really angry, and he was reaching out his hand that was glowing red, and he wanted me to grab it. And I didn't want to touch his hand, but I felt myself like getting pulled towards it, you know. And then all of a sudden, this other man came and put his arms around me and pulled me out of the dream. And the other man that pulled me out, when I saw Dr. Leo Lewis's Martello, who's a hereditary Strega as well from Sicily, just like Lori, he was the one who put his arms around me and pulled me out of the dream. Like, no, you can't have this one. He's ours. And then years later, because this happened when I was young, this dream. Years later, when I'm on the internet, I see that evil man. I see who it is, and it's L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh!
I saw his face. I got the, like, oh my God. I almost, like, I couldn't believe it. And when he, in the dream, like, I had another dream of him at one time when he was, like, about to die, and he was on his deathbed, and he had those same evil face, and he was screaming at the top of his lungs, "If I die, make sure you burn me. Burn me as quick, as soon as I die, burn me." He's screaming, "Burn me. Make sure you burn me." He's screaming. And that man is not right, man. I don't know if you are a believer in Scientology or whatever, but from then on, like, when I found out that was the man in my evil dream, I knew that everything that had to do with that man is just not right. Not right.
Yes, and apparently even his own son has come out publicly and talked about how evil he was, all the demented ceremonies he used to take part in, and all the bloodletting and whatnot, and also how he worked closely with Jack Parsons to conduct the Babylon working ceremony to open up a big honking portal and let the old ones in. I mean, that's just about as demented as it gets.
He was taking over Crowley's work too, and Crowley, you know, he went to Italy. He lived in Italy from 1920 to 1925 or 23. He lived there. He was kicked out by the Strega. They made him leave because he was sitting with a lot of the Strega, trying to get a lot of their ways. But all he was in, even some of my relatives, and he, all he was interested in was learning how to evoke and, you know, different kind of beings. He wanted to call forth spirits, and he wanted to learn how to evoke beings. And that's all he wanted to know, was how to summon different entities. And he wanted, especially the Horned God, he wanted to know how to summon the Horned God.
This is Aleister Crowley. When he set up the Abbey of Thelema, I think, in Sicily, the Strega played a key role in
those
kicking him out.
Walls were
basically
whitewashed afterwards. They whitewashed those walls afterwards. He had walls in the villa painted with murals of sexual encounters of between the Horn God and the Goddess. And
yes,
he had all types of stuff, and they whitewashed those walls after he left.
There's a book out there, very hard to get, but if one can find it, look it up. It's called The Tiger Woman, and it was written by Betty May. I forget her last name, but she was a member of Crowley's cult there in Sicily. And she wrote this novel, but it wasn't really a novel. It was about what the things that went on at that abbey in Italy, and rather Sicily. It involved Raoul Loveday and a number of other things, but you can clearly tell. When the Magus walks into the room, he says, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." Then everyone responds, "Love is the law, love under will." Well, clearly that's Crowley, right? So when people read that story, it's supposed to be a fiction, but it's not. And another thing that was interesting, too, was that apparently the Carabinieri was conducting investigations because children kept disappearing in those communities where that lodge was. And they had fingered Crowley as being behind a lot of these disappearances.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. See, in Australia, there's two factions basically in magic, the Malindante and the Benindante. The Malindante is the evil, the ones that they're evil dark sorcerers. They're out to dominate and manipulate and put evil spells on people. And then you got the Benindante, who is just meant for healing and protection. And it's completely two different factions, but equally as powerful. I mean, For us, for true, I know we have to finish this first hour, but real quick before we close, for true magic to work, you have to have true love in your heart chakra for true good magic to work. And same goes for dark magic. If you have true evil darkness in your heart chakra, then you will be a dark evil being with dark magic. But it has to be from your heart chakra. It comes from the mind is like a computer. Without the heart, we're just AI.
The heart being this immensely powerful electromagnetic dynamo with intentions and focused intent can power the intentions and create and manifest. This is what Greg Braden talks about in all the work he does as far as a divine matrix is focused intent powered by emotions, but coming from a heart-centered place. Then one begins to interact with and call upon and work through higher dimensional frequencies, vice someone from a very base malign perspective, utilizing intentions and utilizing will for entirely malign purposes. And people have to understand that the academics and the scientists tell us all this stuff is impossible, but meanwhile, in the dark, cloistered realms of these secret societies, this is what they do. They know that elemental powers work. They take it for granted. They make us think none of this is real and it's all silly, but they put all these ceremonies in our face all the time anyway, with the CERN ceremonies, the Super Bowl halftime ceremonies. Yeah. It gets embedded into our subconscious that way. Well, we've reached the end of the first hour, and we're just getting started. Our very special guest today is Ra Castaldo, a Strega, mystic, visionary, seer, and healer. If you like what we do here at the CosmicSwitchboard.com show, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, subscribe and become a member. And we're just getting started. We have a lot of information in the second half that Ra is going to share with us regarding possibly my lab experience in Long Beach, some of his encounters with certain ET groups, which I think the listening audience will be very interested in. And we'll be back at the start of the next hour.
Cosmic Switchboard.
The Cosmic Switchboard Show.